We want to thank our sponsor, Great Western Bank, a proud supporter of the Wildcast podcast. At Great Western Bank, they focus on serving family-owned businesses and their overall financial needs. Whether your company needs increased working capital, equipment or SBA financing, purchasing or renovating a building or construction financing, Great Western Bank has the expertise to work through your specific financial needs. Visit the Great Western Bank branch on Campbell between Glen and Fort Lowell or call 520-325-1135 to talk to any of the business bankers about your specific needs. Member FDIC.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast. Justin Spears here with Bruce Pasco, and we'll have a very special guest joining us here in just a little bit, and PJ Brown talking all things Arizona Wildcats basketball. We are at Frog and Firkin because the Arizona Wildcats are back at home this weekend. They got the Utah Utes and the Colorado Buffaloes, and before every U of A home football and basketball game, we always like to come out to Frog and Firkin, record a podcast, talk about a lot of fun things, and preview what a lot of fans can expect for this weekend. So before we get into the nuts and bolts here, make sure you download the Wildcaster app. It's free and available on the App Store and Google Play. Also, make sure you subscribe to the Wildcast podcast on Apple Podcasts. Bruce Pasco, now that we're here at Frog and Firkin, Arizona has its second Pac-12 home trip or home stand coming up here against Colorado and Utah. I did not expect Arizona to get swept by the Oregon schools. You figured you lose to Oregon, okay, fine. That's a top 10 team. That's a quality opponent. But the way they looked against Oregon State, I thought was atrocious because it's Oregon State. Trace Tinkle might be the only NBA player on its roster. And beforehand, it was always, okay, the losses Arizona has on its resume, those are considered good losses. Against Gonzaga, against Baylor, I mean, that's number one and two right there. And then against a St. John's team who's playing pretty well at the time, but you can maybe pinpoint it was right before the Christmas break, so maybe the guys were mentally checked out before conference play. Oregon, a good loss, but the loss against Oregon State I thought was just a bad loss. You were up there in Corvallis, Bruce. How would you dissect that?
Well, the margin of it was bad. I actually thought they could lose both. It wasn't a huge surprise in the sense that you're right, Oregon State doesn't have the talent, but Trace Tinkle is terrific in the college game, and he's not maybe an NBA first rounder because he's maybe a hair slow, but he's amazing as a college player. And if you look at the whole experience of that team, that played a big role. Experience for that team, they were coming off a bad loss to ASU. They were motivated. And I don't think it's, and maybe it seems simplistic to talk about the mental aspect of it, but I don't think sitting around Corvallis in 40-degree rainstorms for 48 hours before a game is a good thing. They basically just hung out in their rooms, and they did prepare, and do all their usual stuff, but that's a lot of time to sit around, and not necessarily a good thing. So there was that, and maybe again, part of that is youth. You know, Arizona, I think you saw this weekend that Arizona got beaten by two teams that really were led by veterans, and that makes a huge difference too.
So Arizona this past weekend got swept by the Oregon schools on the road for the first time since 2005-06. Bruce, I didn't know that. Did you know that?
Yeah. They had not. In fact, every Miller trip before this weekend to Oregon was one loss and one win all the time. Sometimes Oregon State, sometimes Oregon. They would lose to. But
yeah.
Yeah, usually the playoff of one, but and win the other one. But I mean, and also speaking of that two day gap. The three previous times that they had 2 days in between, they lost the second game, including the Elite Eight teams of 2011 and 2015. So it's a tough deal up there. And then this year, Oregon State, even though they lost to ASU and have been a little bit weird, they may be as good this year as they've been under Tinkle so far. So, you know, it's troubling from Arizona if you look at the aspect of, yes, they got swept, they've lost 5-7, what the heck is going on? But if you really look at it, only that St. John's game and the margin and the way Oregon State played out are the really bad the bad signs. I mean, that is assuming they pick it up this weekend and take care of these two games.
So Arizona falls out of the AP Top 25 for the first time this season. Maybe this gives them some motivation moving forward, because Arizona has always been the target. Anytime they play against the opponent, each team is going to give Arizona its A game. And that's one thing I don't think maybe some of the freshmen realize, guys like Nico Mannion, Zeke Nagy, and Josh Green. I don't think this team is talented enough to just come out and say, we're Arizona. Even if we have a bad game, we're still going to come out and win. And a lot of teams on the other side say, okay, well, that's Arizona. Data Altman, one story I will always talk about when discussing the rivalry between Oregon and Arizona. Data Altman always pitches to recruits, how can you help us beat Arizona? Arizona is the team that everybody is chasing. And this year's team just doesn't have that talent to really struggle and expect to come out with a win.
Yeah, and I think you know, maybe in retrospect, I think they scheduled a little bit too easy, too many home games early, and that may have been a function of not knowing exactly who they'd have. But they have a pretty good team, and they probably could have used a tougher test or so. And then the way it turned out, and this wasn't necessarily their fault, they didn't have a single road game, if you really look at it, until they went to Oregon. I mean, even that game at Baylor, most of the fans, they were rooting for them. And then when they were in Anaheim, most of the fans were rooting for them. Most of them are empty seats, but the fans that were there were rooting for Arizona. So they've kind of had this kind of backing everywhere they go, and kind of easy, you know, support system or whatever, and now they go into two adverse environments. And as you say, teams are gunning for them, and boom, you have no room for error in these things. You've got to come out. And at Oregon, Arizona did actually come out pretty strong, but Oregon State was a totally different deal.
Sean Miller had his weekly press conference earlier today discussing what to expect out of Utah, what to expect out of Colorado, and also looking back on this past road trip and whether or not Arizona is expected to make any lineup changes. Before we discuss possible lineup changes, he did discuss Zeke Nagy, and he's been Arizona's most consistent player, pretty much both scoring and rebounding. Even the loss against Oregon, or against Oregon State, you know, he was still able to finish with 21 points and 9 rebounds. He's been consistent all year long for Arizona in all the losses. What will it take for Arizona to finally get consistency from guys like Nico Mannion and Josh Green?
Well, I think a lot of it is just experience. I mean, those guys are super talented, but, you know, when you have that play at the end of the Oregon game and Nico's inbounding to Josh Green and Green can't grab it down and Peyton Pritchard just snaps it, you know, those are things that you just have to go through, I think. And, you know, so for that reason, and, you know, if they can progress quickly and keep their confidence up, maybe by the end of the season, this could be a team that could still, you know, be quite a factor. It probably would help them to get in top four finish in the league so they can skip that first game in the tournament. But, you know, they could be a different team late in the season. Again, this was their first weekend on the road. And here we are in midseason. It was the first time they've been in that environment. And so they have to grow from it that way. We'll see. But, and again, this weekend, because of that, should be a chance to build some confidence at home. You know, against the teams that they really need to take care of.
Are the unfair expectations of Nico Mannion starting to show? Because ever since he came over to Arizona, everybody pinned, that's the guy that's going to take Arizona to the promised land. He's a Phoenix point guard. He's a five-star guy at that. He's a McDonald's All-American. I've heard from several media members who have been covering Arizona sports for decades say that this guy is the best point guard to come out of Arizona since Mike Bibby.
Right.
And so you try to, you know, align the stars, and you think, man, that guy is going to take Arizona to the Final Four. In some of these losses, Nico Mannion has looked very inconsistent. I mean, he's been a bright spot for Arizona this year, no doubt. There's nobody on this team that's capable of leading the charge quite like a guy like Nico Mannion, but I just think we maybe pinned unfair expectations on Nico Mannion.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably too high expectations probably 80% of the time with players that come in here. Just the nature of Arizona being Arizona. I mean, literally, sometimes when Arizona gets a kid, the recruiting rankings will go up. Just because Arizona got him, people think, well, he must be even better or whatever. And so you get these unbelievable expectations. And I think he is as good as the hype, but he's in a little bit of a freshman slump. He had the back injury and, you know, never quite been the same since then. And there's an unbelievable amount of pressure on him. I'm sure he's having to deal with the expectation he's going to leave for the NBA in a couple months, and you know.
Oh, Miller already said he's gone,
and that's, you know, and that's just a lot. So he's not only carrying this team on his shoulders, but also he's got to, you know, he's probably thinking, I got to make sure I stay in the lottery or whatever. It's a lot to bear. And yeah, you know, the other difference is it is a very valid comparison with Mike Bibby. The difference was that Bibby on that team had a lot of sophomores and juniors who were really good players around him. And Nico on this team is, you know, he's got Zeke is the best player. They're both freshmen. There's, you know, the older guys are mostly role players.
But Arizona does have sophomores, juniors, and seniors. They do have veterans, but they haven't been able to step up. And this kind of transitions into our next topic, what Sean Miller discussed in his weekly press conference. Yeah. Is there a possibility that Miller shakes up the starting lineup? Is there a possibility where we're going to see completely different rotations this week against Utah and Colorado? Because Dylan Smith, I call him for Lakers fans, I call him the Kentavious Caldwell Pope of this Arizona team, because you don't know what you're going to get. Against Oregon in that second half when he finished with 11 points, and he was phenomenal from three-point range. And then against Oregon State, he comes out and lays a dud. He's 0 of 6 from the field, 0 of 4 from 3, and only finished with 2 points. And then we hear, oh, he's this great rebounding guard. Well, he only finished with 1 board in that game against Oregon State. If the ball's not going in the hoop, you got to figure out how to adjust your game and be an asset for your team to win. Dylan Smith hasn't been that guy, or at least he wasn't that guy against Oregon State. Chase Jeter, yeah, he had 8 points against Oregon State, but he only had 2 rebounds the entire road trip. For a guy who was once McDonald's All-American, last year's co-captain for Arizona, the leading scorer, the leading rebounder, for him to be in this slump, I just think it's kind of unacceptable at this point for Arizona. And Miller teased that he might change the lineup. He might not. If I'm Miller, why not shake things up? If this five with Nico Mannion, Dylan Smith, Josh Green, Chase Jr., and Zeke Nagy isn't working, maybe you look at maybe some of the younger guys. Maybe you look at Stone Gettings now that he's still recovering from his injury. I just think if you're looking to shake things up and make some changes, I look at Chase Jeter and Dylan Smith right away.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, those are all good points. It's really good. The fact is that, he's not changed the starting lineup, but his rotations, Jeter, Ira Lee, Dylan Smith, have all been taken out of games for a significant amount of times, whole halves. He didn't play Ira Lee for almost the full first half against Oregon State. These are guys that there are their veterans, and they need to be consistent. You're right. So that's got to be frustrating. That's, again, what I'm talking about with Nico Mannion. He could probably use a little help from the upperclassmen, be a little more consistent and make his job a little bit easier. I mean, maybe if they pull down a couple more rebounds against Oregon or whatever, he doesn't have to make that pass to Josh Green at the end that doesn't make it or whatever. There's a lot of what-ifs you could go through. And so right now he has not changed the lineup, but he's made a lot of changes within the rotation, and he has an unusually deep toolbox to do that with 10 guys and different skill sets with Koloko and Gettings. But he did seem to indicate, and I had to follow up to ask him today because I wasn't sure what he meant, because at first he said, I think so. when we asked if he was going to change the starting lineup, and I said, well, do you want to change the starting lineup or the rotation? And he says, well, we're not there yet, but we might. It's open. And so I kind of took that to think maybe he's going to start the same guys at the beginning, see how it goes in the first 4 minutes, and then maybe make major changes right away. And if somebody's not performing the first 4 minutes, not only is he out for the next 4, but he might be out the rest of the half and possibly even the second half, or he might change the starting lineup for the second half as he did against St. John's. However, so far, those things haven't really been working. So, maybe at some point when you do get to a wholesale change in the starting lineup, especially if they come out slow on Thursday. I can see that happening on Saturday.
And if you do change up the starting lineup and you take out Chase Jeter, last year's co-captain, this year's anchor at center, how is he going to respond? Because when was the last time Chase Jeter came off the bench, when he was at Duke? Because last year, he had no choice but to play, because who else are you going to start ahead of Chase Jeter? Sean Miller's got options for this year's team.
But it is also a function of the emotional personality of each of those guys. Like last year, for example, when he had Ryan Luther and Acott, and Ryan Luther was starting. But Ryan Luther was the kind of kid where if he's not starting, he's okay with it. You know, it's not going to. But Acott was not. So, and the people around him were not. So Acott started, and it would work out. As it turned out, Acott still ended up transferring because he wasn't happy or whatever. And, you know, but there is, you have to balance that too. And I don't know whether Jeter's in that category where if you don't start him, maybe he's going to be destroyed. But it is, and this is something I thought early in the year, it's a very delicate dynamic when you have three freshmen who are your best players by far, and then you have fifth-year freshmen who are honestly trying to get pro contracts. That's what they're playing for. I'm sure they want to get to the tournament and do well and all that, but Chase Jeter's career is on the line here. He's trying to you know, go somewhere and make some money next year. Yeah. So it's got to be frustrating for him, even though he appears to be a good team player and like Zeke and all that, but it's got to be frustrating to be a fifth-year player and then have a true freshman come in and get all that love and all that points and all that. So, you know, how do you handle that as a coach, and what kind of guy is he? You know, it remains to be seen.
What do you think about this, Bruce? My ideal starting lineup, if you are going to make some changes, Nico Mannion, Jamal Baker, Josh Green, Stone Gettings, and you put Zeke Nagy at the five. Because Zeke, what's his range, really? I mean, he's going to knock down the occasional elbow jumper, maybe a mid-range shot, but most of his work is close to the basket. Yeah. Stone Gettings, on the other hand, very versatile. He can knock down the three if it's open, and he can move all around the floor. I like him as a stretch four, because Zeke Nagy and Chase Jeter together, they both work around the basket. I think if you have a Stone Gettings and a Zeke together, it really opens things up for Arizona.
No question. Yeah.
And then you have an athletic wing in Josh Green, and Jamal Baker can almost slide into what Brandon Williams was last year, a combo guard who could play point, but he's going to start at the two alongside whoever's playing point guard. That way, when Nico needs a break, you can slide over Jamal. You can bring Max Hazard off the bench and Dylan Smith as well. I just think that five right there with Nico, Jamal, Josh, Zeke, and Stone Gettings, I think that might be Arizona's best five on the floor.
Well, I think, you know, Miller, certainly in the front court, I agree with that. And I think Miller has hinted, there's been a couple of times lately where I've asked him or other guys have asked him about, you know, changing the lineup, and then he just like brings up Stone out of nowhere. Like, nobody asked him about Stone. It's like, he did that the other day when we were in Corvallis before the game, and he just said, I like what Stone brings us or whatever. And but he didn't say he was going to start him, but it seems like in the back of his mind he's thinking about that. So that definitely could happen, because you're right. The dynamic between Zeke killing you down low and Stone being able to shoot from range is just going to drive, you know, really be a problem for defenses potentially. But I don't know about, the only thing I don't know about is Baker over Smith. I still think Smith brings overall more pluses than minuses, and he's probably a better defender at this point, and that's very important to Miller. He's a little more experienced, and Baker, again, seems like the kind of guy who's happy with his role, coming off the bench and playing both and still playing a lot of minutes. So I think he's okay with it. And so I don't know. I guess I don't see that, but maybe that happens at some point too, just to give it a try.
It's now time to bring on a very special guest to the Wildcast podcast. She's been on this podcast several times talking all things Arizona women's basketball. Arizona women's basketball beat writer for the Arizona Daily Star, PJ Brown. PJ, thanks for coming by Frog and Firkin.
Thanks for inviting me, Justin. I mean, it's exciting to be back on the podcast again.
So Arizona, much like the men's team, they were swept by the Oregon schools, but a different scenario. Different case. Oregon State, number three team in the country. Oregon, number two team in the country. Arizona had an opportunity to beat both of those teams in the final minute. And I think that's very encouraging for Adia Barnes and the program, because 2 years ago, Arizona loses by maybe 20 points in each game.
A little more than that.
Maybe a little bit more. Now, in front of, was it set a little over 7,000 fans at McHale Center against Oregon?
Yeah.
I mean, Arizona has opportunities to win a lot of these games. And eventually, and like Adia Barnes said, it may be next year or the year after that, but eventually, we're going to be talking about Arizona being a team that gets wins over these marquee programs. What did you take away out of this past weekend?
It's really amazing. This team keeps surprising me, I guess I would say. I knew that they were better than last year when they started out. I knew that they were going to be good. And as the season progressed, I knew that they would get better like they did last year, because that's how Adia Barnes coaches her teams. But I didn't know quite that they would go toe-to-toe with both teams. I thought Oregon State they had a shot at. Last year they took them to double overtime. It was the last game of the regular season. And that sort of put them on that roll when they won the WNIT. So I thought Friday night would be a good matchup. I didn't know what to expect on Sunday. You know, last year, the first game against Oregon, they lost by like 30 or 33 points. At the end of the season, they lost to them, and they had a fourth quarter where they only scored 4 points. So I just wasn't sure how they were going to match up, especially because both of those teams are better too. They were two of the top three teams in the country at the time. And they came out, they're not afraid to play anybody. That's yeah. what we know about this team. They're going to go toe-to-toe with anybody. I think that they're showing right now that they belong and they can hang. And one of these days, and I think it possibly could, I think it's going to be sometime later in this season, they will win these close games. They will learn how to finish. Right now, they're not quite there yet. But once they do, it's game over.
Yeah.
Because that puts them on a totally different plane.
By the way, Sabrina Ionescu had the quietest triple-double I've ever seen in yes. basketball history. She was kind of almost – Arizona did a decent job almost taking her out of the game. I use air quotes. But then she ends up with a triple-double. And it was the quietest triple-double I've ever seen.
I rewatched the game on Monday. Because I like to watch both games after I cover them to see what I missed and also to listen to Coach B and see what they all have to say on the telecast, see what I can pick up. And the one thing I noticed, they totally shut Sabrina down. First half, I think she only had 2 points. But it was really interesting. The last 5 minutes of the game is when she sort of takes over for Oregon. And all of a sudden... She didn't even know after the game. She looked at that. She's like, really? I had a triple double. Like what?
Yeah.
Yeah. You would have never known.
It was awesome. Yeah. It was awesome. But I agree with you, PJ. I think this is Arizona's coming out party. They're letting everybody know we were the laughing stock of the Pac-12 for a little bit, and now we're going to be an NCAA tournament team. But there is one thing that is missing, and you go back in that game against Oregon and Oregon State. They're getting killed on the boards. They got out-rebounded by 17 against Oregon. And Samaje Smith, tall, lanky, she's got a lot of potential. I mean, I can't wait to see her 2 years from now. From her freshman year till now, it's been night and day. Imagine 2 years from now. Kate Reese has gotten much better, but getting out-rebounded by 17 – it makes you scratch your head a little bit. And I think if Arizona eventually gets a dominant center or dominant front court player that's mostly known for rebounding more than scoring, then I think that's when you're going to see Arizona take that next step and be considered one of the best in the pack.
Absolutely. But I also think that if you look at these games and you see how close, despite the fact that they didn't have the rebounding, if they weren't held to 6 points in the second quarter, if they made a few more stops in that second quarter, there were a couple plays that I saw that wasn't really Arizona defense where they let somebody drive to the basket and get an easy basket. If they don't do a couple of those things, if they clean up a few little things, they win that game. If a couple of their shots go down that are open looks, they win that game.
Absolutely.
And so, yes, rebounding is important. And believe me, Dia Barnes is making them work on those rebounds this week every single day. But, you know, when you're that close and you have that kind of a disparity, you're doing something right. You're doing a lot of things right. And I think if they just keep grinding, they'll make it over this hump.
PJ, somebody asked you this on Twitter. I believe it was Jason Barr about the new WNBA collective bargaining agreement, which is over 8 years, where the best players in the WNBA will receive $500,000. I mean, the pay is getting tripled in the league. I think this is great because I think it keeps players in the United States because a lot of them go overseas because that's where a lot of good money is, playing in Europe. And with this new collective bargaining agreement, it actually gives WNBA players an off season. And and they're focusing on mental health and players becoming mothers. And I think this is the right step. This is a good step in the right direction. But what does this do for collegiate players now? You said Ari McDonald is focused on this season and only on this season, and rightfully so. But you're one of the best guards in the country. You see how much the pay has increased. You almost have to look at Ari McDonald and say she might be considering going pro next year. What do you think?
There's a couple parts to this. One is that the rookies in up to 2 years, they're making a jump, but they're going to be making, I think, $51,000 to $68,000. Okay. And then I don't know if that's including some of that marketing money or not.
Sure.
But so it went up from about 40 to that. So that's a good jump. But and overall, it's great for all the other players, and it will get better and better as it goes on. I think it depends on the individual player and their situation. So someone like Oregon Satu Sabally is a really exciting player. She's really a great player, and she's a junior. She came in the same class, same year as Arizona's Sam Thomas. And she's somebody who scouts have been talking about that could jump to the WNBA. And this was before the CBA was announced, that they think her size and the position that she plays, she could be WNBA ready. And the fact that if Oregon goes out and wins a national championship, then you got to figure, like, what else do I have to prove? Is there something else that she needs to, that she wants to improve on her own? Or if she wants to help bring another championship to Oregon? I think each individual player has their own situation. I think someone like Ari McDonald is a really great all-around player. And we know that she's the best, one of the best in the country. And I still think that she knows, and there are things that she has to work on before she turns pro.
Absolutely.
And she's working every day on those. Her three-point shot's getting better. Her vision on the court's getting better. There are a lot of things to look at for someone like that. Again, she's looking at this season. She wants to win. That's all she wants. And she wants to get better every day. And she said that. And she keeps saying that when people ask her questions about this.
Yeah.
You know, we don't know what's going to happen at the end of this season. We don't know. Arizona could win the national championship, and then all bets are off.
Can I have some? Doesn't it seem like maybe you need to have a little higher for a rookie scale to make it worth it? I mean, because if you consider the way they give cost of living now, allowances here in college, and unless you don't like school or whatever, it seems to me like it would have to be 70, 75 to make it worth jumping.
I agree with that. I still don't think it's a thing that you would jump unless you're like totally ready. But then the WNBA is a whole different level. What's really interesting is that certain players go out, and it depends where you get drafted, if your coach likes you, how they use you. Maybe they don't use you in the right way. And then that changes how you play in the WNBA, whereas maybe otherwise you would have been a star. I think that plays into it a lot, where you would go and who your coach would be. I also think that you can't get the kind of development and teaching and growth that you can get in college. You have a great coach here who's been there and done it. Adia Barnes played professionally for 13 years. She knows what it takes to be a professional, and not just to be a professional player in the WNBA or overseas, but how to stick on teams. And so that knowledge, and she knows what she and the other coaches can give her players to get ready for that. They're not going to get that development in the pros. You have to be ready. You have to have your own coaches to do that. You're a professional. You have to be ready to play. In college, you get that training. You won't get that anywhere else. And so that's a big plus to stay.
Well, and some of the sports' best coaches are at the collegiate level.
Yes.
Because if you were to ask an average person, name me women's basketball coaches, name me four. I guarantee you all of them are at the collegiate level. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, staying the course and being in college might be the best route, unless it is, of course, you know, a pretty good, you know, paycheck. If you're making 75, close to six figures, then I think it would be worth the jump if you're a player like Ari McDonald. Before we wrap things up, just a quick update. Lauren Ware, who's signed to play volleyball and basketball at Arizona, she was nominated to be a McDonald's All-American. And also Arizona men's basketball signee Dalen Terry out of Phoenix, 6'7" wing, very impressive player. He was also nominated as well. So now that we've got all that stuff out of the way, good week, good matchups this weekend. I'm excited for the game at home against Utah and then against Colorado. And then the women's basketball team, they're on the road against the Washington schools. Adia Barnes is going back to her old stomping grounds this Sunday. PJ, what can you tell us about this matchup?
It's going to be really interesting. Well, first of all, on Friday night they play Washington State.
Wazoo.
And that can be a tough matchup and a tough place to get to.
What's a late game, too?
It's an 8 o'clock start here. It's a 7 there.
Okay.
That's a new start time for the Pac-12 for women's games. One thing that will help the Arizona Wildcats this year is that assistant coach Jackie Naird was an assistant coach at Wazoo last year. And so she knows what they did last year. And she's got a little good intel for the team. Although, you know, the way Adia Barnes coaches, they focus on what they do and what they do best. And they make tweaks each week depending within their system, depending on who they're defending and what they're doing. So the focus really is on getting better all the time and you know, focusing on their strengths and helping boost up like those rebounds, the free throws, which you've seen recently. They've only missed three in the last since the pack over the last four games, and Washington's going to be a tough matchup too. Those once again, both schools, they're very physical. Pac-12 games are physical. They both have really really strong players who have presence. And so, you know, they just have to go and focus on themselves and do what they do best.
Are they still not able to charter anywhere? Can they charter?
They do have a certain number.
This is the one trip you want to charter.
Yeah, and yeah. We didn't ask today about that, but there are a certain number of charter trips that she gets every year. So I would imagine this is the one because this is the longest trip.
Well, if you don't charter, it's a change of planes, then you're going to Spokane, then you're taking a 90-minute bus ride. If you charter, you go Tucson to Pullman. Bam.
Yeah.
Supposedly they've even lengthened the runway there that actual real jets can land in Pullman. So that's a big difference.
All for UVA basketball?
Well, for all, I think honestly the sports in general. I mean, there's all kinds of teams that are trying to get in there. Football teams, you know, and everything else. So it makes a difference. But yeah, I mean, I've seen that little airport. It's like a little strip of cement in the middle of the hills there or whatever, but apparently they've lengthened it to like a 737 could land there now, apparently.
And they had a problem last year, so this is the thing. They had a big blizzard in Washington, and they were in Seattle, and they decided that ASU's playing at Washington on Sunday, and Arizona was playing in Pullman. And somehow Arizona made it to Pullman, and they probably wish they didn't because they got beat. And Arizona State and Washington canceled their game. So what was it better? Was it better to find a way and play in the middle of a snowstorm or not play? I don't know.
Bruce, what can you tell us about this weekend's games? First off, Arizona facing Utah at home. Tip-off is set for 6:30 at McHale Center. And then newly ranked Colorado team on Saturday at 12:30. This is going to be a tough matchup. Sean Miller said this will be a revealing weekend for the Arizona Wildcats when he discussed the rebounding struggles and just the overall effort. But Utah, no slouch. You know, Timmy Allen gets to the free throw line. Gotch is a really solid three-point shooter. What can you tell us about Utah and Colorado?
Right, Utah, I mean, every year, you look at their roster, they lose a bunch of guys. They probably have more transition than anybody in the league. You look at their roster, you're like, how could this team be any good? And every year, they're good. They beat, you know, they beat Kentucky. They finished 5 years in a row now in the top four in the league. They just might make it this year. Who knows? They're coming off tough losses to Oregon and Colorado, but that's, you know, those are not losses that are surprising in any manner. So, and you're right, Timmy Allen's, you know, I think Sean Miller was talking a lot about comparing him to Trace Tinkle. He's a little bit different than Tinkle. Tinkle has a little more range on his game. He's a really good passer. But Allen's just a bulldog inside, and, you know, scoring and getting to the line, he's unbelievable that way. He takes actually most of his shots from the free throw line because he gets so many fouls. So there's that. They've, you know, certainly got to watch out for them. You know, and Utah also plays a lot of different kinds of defenses, sometimes even changing in, you know, going from a zone into a man in the middle of a possession, things like that they'll do that, you know, you have to be on guard for. And then, of course, Colorado, that showdown on Saturday, I mean, that's, you know, that's going to be a key. If Arizona's going to make a serious run at this conference race, obviously they've got to win these both games. And they don't have to go to the mountains this year, so getting a chance to sweep them this weekend would really give them an edge that way. But Colorado, once again, you talk about veteran teams they lost to last weekend. This is probably the most veteran team in the league. That's why they were picked to finish second, I believe. And
McKinley Wright.
Yeah. And they're,
Tyler,
you know,
Bay.
Yeah, and it used to be with Colorado, they were not the same team away from home. They were that mile-high advantage. But they're pretty good on the road now. They've got veteran guys. They're not going to be afraid to come in here or intimidated or any of that. So, you know, that's going to be a really key game. You know, really interesting matchup.
Arizona Wildcats, they will take on Utah at 6:30 p.m. You can watch that game on Pac-12 networks. And then the game against number 20, Colorado, you can watch that game on Fox. Tip-off is set for 12:30 p.m. at McHale Center. Then the women's basketball team will face Washington State in Pullman. That's going to be a tough one for the Wildcats. Arizona right now, 21. In the AP top 25. So it'll be a tough game against Wazoo and Pullman, and then against Washington, Adia Barnes' old coaching stomping grounds. She's always going to be a Wildcat. If you want to watch that game, both games will be on Pac-12 networks, and then that Washington game will be set for a 1 p.m. tip-off.
And you actually have to use their Pac-12 Now app if you're in Tucson, because the game is on the Washington Regional Network, but not on the Arizona Regional Network.
Thanks, Larry Scott.
I've even gotten some emails from people complaining about if they have the national feed, but they don't have Pac-12 Arizona, and the women's games are only on Pac-12 Arizona in some cases, and that's been an issue. And I've told people, unfortunately, you've got to get you've got to buy that extra tier to get the Pac-12 Arizona, or get it through the app or something like that.
Yeah.
So once again, I'll say, thanks, Larry Scott. That'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the Wildcast Podcast on Apple Podcasts. And for all things Arizona basketball related, download the Wildcaster app. It's free and available on the App Store and Google Play. For Bruce, for PJ, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening. We want to thank our sponsor, Great Western Bank, a proud supporter of the Wildcast Podcast. At Great Western Bank, they focus on serving family-owned businesses and their overall financial needs. Whether your company needs increased working capital, equipment or SBA financing, purchasing or renovating a building or construction financing, Great Western Bank has the expertise to work through your specific financial needs. Visit the Great Western Bank branch on Campbell between Glen and Fort Lowell, or call 520-325-1135 to talk to any of the business bankers about your specific needs. Member FDIC.